Chapter 31. The assault began about 30 minutes after we first reached the mosquito ship. The more I got used to it, the more the insectile vessel looked like it belonged here. Where else would a giant mosquito fit in, after all, than in the midst of a forest full of trees that were over a kilometer tall on average? Graves marched in the lead of our lonely unit as we approached the ship. I had to give the man credit. Sure, he was a heartless bastard with the soul of a stone, but he had guts, too. He often led from the front without any concern for his personal safety. Winslade, by comparison, was way back in a headquarters bunker he'd had the techs dig for him using drones. The bunker was behind the trunk of the tree nearest to our position. I imagine him hiding back there, using a bunch of specialists as an excuse and as protection. He'd ordered the rest of us to capture the ship on foot. All around me were people from my unit. Della, Harris, Johnson, and Leeson. We were all marching in a widespread formation. We kept our distance from one another, hoping we'd be harder to take out if the ship suddenly lit us up. I was of the mind that we should up and charge the thing, but that hadn't been the consensus. A heavy infantry group in exo armor could move very quickly across a field like the one we were in, but the trouble was not all of us were in armor now. If we tried a quick assault, we'd be strung out depending on who had working legs that could auto-run and who didn't. To keep the line coherent, we'd been ordered to march together. So far, the ship had just lain there quietly. It really did look as if a big bug with gossamer wings of titanium had just landed on the forest floor to take a break. We reached the ship without incident. Walking up the tongue-like ramp made everyone uneasy, except possibly for Graves himself. He walked up that uneven, slanted surface as if he was mounting the steps outside the mustering hall back home.
"One at a time," he said. "I'm wondering if we're looking at a vehicle manned by a smaller variety of alien. This ramp is pretty narrow for beings as large as these aliens tend to be. Input, Natasha?"
"What, Centurion?"
she answered as if startled. "Weren't you listening? What kind of being would use this type of ramp?"
I glanced over toward her and I felt a surge of sympathy. She wasn't enjoying this adventure, not at all. Her face was white, and I could see her eyes rolling around in her helmet as the dark maw of the ship yawned wide up ahead.
I don't know, sir.
Centurion Graves laughed.
"Don't tell me this thing has you spooked. I could tell you haven't seen enough alien craft yet. Some of the designs are downright weird. You should see a Magua's personal pinnace, for example. They look like rifles, and you enter through the muzzle. The first time I did that, I thought it was going to blast me to kingdom come."
Natasha and I exchanged glances among ourselves. We had no idea what he was talking about, but we were impressed he'd been on a real Magua ship at some point in his long career. Graves stepped over the final lip at the top of the tongue and into the strange mouth of the craft beyond. He vanished like a swallowed morsel. Only his suit lights gleamed faintly to show where he was.
He said. "No internal light sources. No windows, either. Turn on your lamps, people, and make sure your faceplates are closed and locked."
Those who had forgotten to button up adjusted their suits in a hurry. Visors were slapped down, and they clicked as they locked into place. We advanced into the craft, shining our suit lights into the bowels ahead. The ship was simplistic in design. There were only three decks, and the bottom deck was the biggest of the three. That space was filled with egg-shaped nodules that lined the floor, walls, and ceiling. The eggs were in what looked like a honeycomb of hexagons built with secreted resins. There were fleshy leaves surrounding each egg, and what looked like roots or veins growing between them. Graves ordered us to stay out of there. The eggs were clearly some kind of alien life form. The middle deck was full of equipment. Strange-looking devices that seemed to produce carbon dioxide and generate power. The top deck was the control system. Fortunately, it was unoccupied. The accommodations were very large, however. Whoever was expected to pilot this ship was clearly a giant.
Has anyone ever seen a being that might operate this kind of control system? Graves demanded. I looked at the controls, baffled. Paddle-like devices lined the floor. They looked rubbery and almost organic. 2 or 3 meters above the paddles was an uneven surface, call it a table or a board, encrusted with strange growths. The techs analyzed the paddles and determined they gave the pilots feedback as they were hooked to external sensors. Instead of visual gauges or readouts, the feedback systems consisted of tactile nubs and tips. These things squirmed when you made contact with them. Out of all of us, only Natasha seemed more fascinated than disgusted. She became increasingly excited as she examined the alien technology.
"This is unbelievable," she said. "So different from Imperial standard. I can only guess at the details, but this thing that looks like a seashell has to provide a reading of speed, or maybe navigational data. The pilot sits here, next to this pineapple thing, and he must have to remain in contact with the mobile data readouts. Then, using these paddles way down here..."
"Are you serious?" Graves asked in disgust. "Nothing Imperial standard at all. There's no way we'll ever figure this out."
"Well, it's not a familiar interface, naturally, but given enough time, Centurion..."
"We don't have time. I'm going outside to report back to Winslade. This mission is a bust."
Graves strode out of the ship to stand on the tongue. Those of us left inside looked at one another, relieved and worried all at once. After all, nothing had attacked us yet. But on the downside, we weren't going to be getting home inside this strange ship. Graves contacted us a moment later on the unit-wide channel.
"We've got a problem," he announced. "We've been out of communication while we've been in here exploring. Those pods hanging from the trees we passed on the way to this ship have begun tearing themselves open. Walkers are massing up between our position and the lifter. This whole thing might have been a trap all along. In any case, Winslade has ordered us to stay here and defend our captured prize at all costs."
"I don't believe this," Leeson said to me. Then keyed his mic and talked to everyone. "Centurion, did you tell the Primus this ship is impossible to figure out and full of alien eggs, sir?"
"We have our orders," Graves said. "Take up defensive positions and remove those eggs in the main hold. I want them all tossed overboard."
Leeson and I looked at one another. Neither one of us wore a happy expression.
"Leeson," Graves continued as if he could see our faces, "stop crying and get your platoon on it. Clear out that hold."
Closing his eyes and shaking his head, Leeson let out a long sigh.
"All right, you heard the man. Let's move out."
Trotting down the nearest ramp, he vanished in the direction of the hold. I followed with Harris and his squad behind me. Profanity echoed from every wall all the way to the bottom. We soon stood in a knot among the alien eggs nestled in their honeycombs. There had to be 1,000 of them, maybe more.
"I say we burn them," Carlo said. "That worked last time."
"That's a solid idea, Ortiz," Leeson said. "But we can't do that. We might damage the ship. The whole point is to take this ship for ourselves, not to burn it up."
"Graves himself already said we can't fly this thing. Maybe we should have an accident to speed things along."
Leeson eyed him for a moment. I couldn't tell if he was considering doing it or shooting Carlos for being mouthy. It might have been a toss-up.
"You've been following McGill for too long," Leeson said at last. "I'm going to recommend an assignment change after this mission. You can be Harris's medic next time we deploy."
"No reassignment is necessary, adjunct," Carlo said.
"I say it is. You two have been rubbing on each other in the same squad for years. Don't you want to get away from McGill?"
Carlos gave him a funny look. By funny, I mean stressed and uncertain, not like he was about to laugh or anything. I realized right then that Carlos didn't want to be separated from me. He'd been by my side for years, just as Leeson had said. Despite all our adventures, mishaps, and downright disasters, he wanted to keep it that way.
"I was just talking big, sir," he said. "No changes in the rosters are necessary."
Leeson snorted.
"All right, then. How about you shut your mouth, get down there into that hexagon of bug spit, and carry the first egg out.
Carlos set his teeth. He glanced at me, but I didn't say anything. I knew what Leeson was thinking. If Ortiz didn't want to get transferred, he could damned well start doing more work and less complaining. Leeson was testing him, and I couldn't honestly fault his methods. Resignedly, Carlos moved to the nearest of the hexagons and stepped inside. There were hundreds of these large, indented regions on the floor of the hold, and more on the walls and ceiling. About a meter deep, these hexagons didn't have water in them. They had eggs instead. The eggs were kind of kiwi-shaped. They were roughly scaled on the outside, and they had vein-like roots running in between them. I was immediately reminded of the cocoons we'd found back in the forest with the Nexus plant. Could these eggs be like those things, pods full of some kind of new life form? As Carlos approached the nearest egg, moving slowly so as not to step on any of the hose-thick roots that ran between them, I looked all over the hold. Where were these roots going?
"Get on with it!" Leeson shouted.
Carlos hesitated. Harris and his team had gathered up behind us. They were all grins, nudging one another and pointing at Carlos with glee. They were enjoying the scene. Carlos had always had a big mouth. Over time, that tended to irritate a lot of folks, and in our unit, he'd pretty much irritated us all. But still, I felt an urge to defend him.
"Adjunct, sir," I said. "What now, McGill?"
"That's my one and only medic you're endangering out there. He hasn't got a strip of armor on, either."
"You want to take his place?"
"Yes, sir, if I may." Leeson stared at me with narrow eyes.
"Request denied. Carry on, Ortiz, and hurry up, or I'll start kicking those eggs over one at a time myself."
"Maybe he should carry two at once, sir,"
Harris suggested.
"Shut up. One man, one egg. If Ortiz lives, you'll all get your chance to carry plenty of them."
Harris retreated hastily. Carlos took in a deep breath, knelt, and put his hands around the lower, fatter end of an egg. He then straightened, using his legs to do the lifting. Even so, he struggled with the weight of it.
"Heavy, sir,"
he managed to grunt out.
"That's 'cause they're all attached with those hoses. Put it down, fool, and cut it loose first."
Blinking with the strain and fear, Carlos put his egg down. He then produced a knife and slashed the vein-like roots that interconnected the eggs. He was sweating, despite the fact it wasn't all that hot in here. A hissing sound erupted as he cut the hoses. Liquid gushed out and pooled around his boots. A vapor arose like white smoke.
"That looks like the stuff we met up with on Minotaur," I commented. "Is that acid?"
"By the look of it," Natasha said, "it must have a highly unstable pH.
"Pick the damn thing up, Ortiz," shouted Adjunct Leeson. "Time's wasting. If your boots melt, well, we'll find you new ones."
Everyone knew what that meant. The only supply of fresh boots was back at the lifter and the lockers near the revival rooms. Carlos knelt again, gripped the bulbous egg, and lifted. It came clear, but it sloshed and dribbled more liquids.
"Natasha said these plants use stinks and liquids to talk," Harris said. "Maybe it's trying to talk to you. What's it saying, Ortiz?"
"It says you smell like your mama's purse, Harris,"
Ortiz called back. Harris was growling something I didn't catch. I had to hand it to Carlos. There he was, carrying an alien egg dripping acid all over his shoes, and he was still smarting off to his superiors. I had to admire his dedication. Carlos almost made it out of the hold. The trouble came when he reached the edge of the honeycomb he was in. I reached down along with Sargon, and we hauled him out. At least, we tried to. Unfortunately, the egg thing, or pod, or whatever you want to call it, tipped too far and spilled liquid all over his pants. That white smoke billowed and hissed like hot rocks hit with cold water. I could hardly see him for a second, and although I tried to haul Carlos up onto the higher deck with us, he stayed down there as if glued to the deck.
"Have you got him, Sargon?" I asked.
"I think so."
"Carlos, what's wrong?"
There wasn't any answer.
"Carlos, damn it, man, drop the egg. Let's get you out of there."
"No,"
Leeson shouted from behind me. I don't want to see Ortiz without his friggin' egg.
One more pull, Sargon.
We reached down, braced ourselves, and pulled hard. We each had one of his elbows and were pulling on his arms. I couldn't tell what was wrong with him. There was white smoke billowing all around all three of us. I could hear the sounds of leaking fluids. Suddenly, I lost my grip. Sargon gave a whoop and held something up into my face. Confused, I stared at Sargon. He was just an outline in the vapor.
Did you get him?
Sort of, he said. He showed me what he had. It was an arm. Carlos's arm. The rest of him, well, that was missing.